You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
You can't handle the truth!
Dave Hodges is as mad as hell, and he's not gonna take it anymore.
I'd like to help you, Dr. Yes, I really, really would, but the din in my head, it's too much and it's not good. I'm standing in a window, tunnel, shouting through the wall, and I'd like to give you information. Ask me what blood makes noise. It's a ringing in my ear, blood makes noise. And I can't really hear you in the thickening of fear.
Common sense is not so common. This is the Common Sense Show with Dave Hodges.
Good evening, everybody. This is Dave Hodges of the Common Sense Show. Katie Whalen is flying co-pilot with me, as she usually does at this time, and we always come to you live on Sunday evenings from 8 p.m. to 11 p.m. in the Eastern Time Zone, 5 to 8 Pacific, and things just keep growing for us, and we appreciate all of your support. I just want to remind everybody that one of the sponsors for this hour is Steve Quayle of Renaissance Precious Metals. In fact, I had a guy write to me, and he said, Dave, I just want to get food, water, and guns. And, right, you want to get through the initial rush when society collapses and the economy falls apart, and this has certainly dominated the news this week. That's the proper approach. But if you're planning to survive and you want to come out the other side, you better be doing what the elite is doing, and that's scoring gold. And if you want to know more about that, give Steve a call tomorrow at 406-586-4842. Most low pressure that you're going to get, that's 406-586-4842. And speaking of food, NumanaFoods.com/Hodges is our other sponsor for this first hour. And if the economy goes down, things aren't moving, and the average American has less than 3 days of food supplies, well, I think you know how that's going to work. So again, NumanaFoods.com/Hodges. Well, we have a very, very special guest here in the first hour. We have John Rappaport, and we'll get to John in just a minute. In the second 2 hours, we're going to be joined by Doug Hagman, and we're going to be talking about all the spinoff challenges that are coming from the economic collapse that the Fed is talking about. I mean, what else would they be talking about in these secret meetings? Katie's going to be doing the bulk of the interview here for the first hour, because this is, as we've dubbed, a special section of the health report. So, Katie, let me bring you on in here, and glad you're with us, and really looking forward to the interview with John.
I am, too. Thank you, Dave. I'm very excited about this. There's so many things going on with the health world, and so John is the go-to guy for that. So thank you for letting me do this. It's great.
Well, we're still working on getting John here, and we're kind of ironing out our...
He's here.
Oh, we have John. Okay. Message? Okay, yeah. Well, let's bring him in. John Rappaport, one of the best writers on the net, fearless crusader, also a victim of Facebook like yours truly. I remember how they took he and a bunch of others down a few years ago for daring to tell the truth. And we're going to talk a lot tonight about vaccines and the horrendous danger they pose to your children. John, welcome to the show.
Good to be here, Dave. Thanks.
Glad to have you.
John,
go ahead, Katie.
Oh, I was just going to say, John, thank you for coming on the show. This is terrific, and it's an honor.
Appreciate it. Thank you very much. Good to be here.
Yes. So I am going to start this off, and I'm overwhelmed. I was making notes for the show, John, and I ran out of paper. So I narrowed it down to just a few things. But for the audience who is, we have a pretty big and growing audience. There's a lot of people waking up, thanks to the work of people like John Rappaport. There are a lot of people waking up, and they're turning to what I call new mainstream media. We are the new mainstream media, the real media, the truth media. So I want to give a little bio to a shout out to John, but also read from his bio for the new listeners who aren't too familiar with him. And John, you can give your websites before and after also, where people can read your good work. John has a collection of books, The Matrix Revealed, Exit from the Matrix, Power Outside the Matrix. John, you're also a candidate for U.S. Congress, 29th District of California. You have a consulting practice for private clients, purpose of which I love is the expansion of personal creative power. That's what we need, because we have been sucked into the matrix and we've lost that creative power. You were nominated for a Pulitzer Prize. You've worked as an investigative reporter for 30 years, writing articles on politics, medicine, health for CBS Health Watch, LA Weekly, Spin Magazine, Stern, and other newspapers and magazines in the U.S. and Europe. And you deliver lectures and seminars on global politics, health, logic, creative power to audiences around the world. And something I took from your bio, which I love, is who, and I want to start this out and pick your brain on this, who runs the world and what we can all do about it? Tell us about that. Tell us what inspired that.
Well, what inspired it was I started working as a reporter in 1982, and for the next, let's call it 5 or 6 years, I kept digging deeper into questions with my articles until I got to the point where it was clear that I was looking at that question, who's running things? And when I crossed that line and began to write about that in a pretty aggressive manner, things became more difficult for me as a reporter, working for newspapers and magazines as a freelancer. In other words, my stories, ideas were not received in a friendly fashion. So that gave me a clue that this was something that was not on the agenda for these even alternative media outfits that I was writing for. The medical issue was the one that really drew me in, because I began to add up all the damage that the medical cartel, as I called it, was creating in the United States and other countries around the world. And it came to a horrific total from many different kinds of treatment and so forth. And then I wrote my first book, AIDS, Inc., 1988, which was really an exploration of what goes on in medical research labs and how they slant the truth when they decide what is a disease, what is a disorder, what causes a particular disease, and so forth. And the deeper I went, the more I realized that this was really, the medical cartel was a political force flying under the flag of helping people and healing people and doing good for the world, saying that it was nonpartisan, nonpolitical, very neutral on those counts and so forth, but they really weren't at all. And then, of course, I traced back the history, a lot of other people have as well, to the Rockefeller family and the transformation of medicine early in the 20th century, when pharmaceutical medicine began to really take off, and understood that this was part of the globalist agenda to bring people, all people from all over the world, into a cradle-to-grave system, mm-hmm. where they would be diagnosed with a certain number of diseases and disorders during their life. They would be drugged with toxic substances that would disable them and debilitate them and make them less able to resist the forces of evil, and that this was part of the plan, that it wasn't what it claimed to be at all, and that it was the most successful long-term part of the globalist agenda. And it was also the most heavily protected in the press of any subject on the planet. For example, if I were to try to get an article published on the toxicity of vaccines in a major publication, offering facts, evidence, studies, et cetera, my chance of doing that would be exactly zero. Never going to happen. That's based on my experience of 30 years. That is tremendous protection that the media affords to the medical cartel. So that's kind of a brief intro on how I got started in this.
No, and that's what I was going to go into, is the incestuous relationship between the pharmaceutical companies, and we can go back in terms of the history of this for people trying to catch up who are just waking up to this matrix they're in. But I wanted to ask you what you think of, or your idea of how it all plays out in terms of the incestuous relationship between the pharmaceutical companies, their enforcement arm, the FDA, and the politicians and the media, and how that is it quietly understood? Are there actual threats? Are there payments? I mean, how does that work where there's this agenda that is just pushed through? How does that work behind the scenes, John?
That's a good question. You have to start with the idea that they're all on the same team. They may not seem to be at times. There are conflicts that occasionally arise, but most of the conflicts are fake. They're staged to make it look like, you know, there are great differences and competition and so forth. But the media, the politicians, the pharmaceutical companies, they're all on the same page. They're all on the same team. And because that's true, you're never going to get a straight story from any of those quarters. And I'll give you an example. The Centers for Disease Control, which is one of the biggest health agencies in the world, public health agencies, they actually do seminars for reporters, and they train reporters. And some of these reporters also have a history, if they're doctors, with the CDC's service called the Epidemic Intelligence Services, which is like the CIA in a medical sense.
Wow.
Because these doctors are on call once they graduate from the training program at any time, anywhere, to suddenly pack a bag and go to a place where they are told some sort of outbreak is happening, and they are basically the virus hunters. They are the ones who are tasked with the job of discovering what the virus is that's causing the outbreak and making reports and so forth, and the media fall in line dutifully. Well, some of these people that work for the Epidemic Intelligence Service eventually become reporters. So you've got reporters that are writing medical stories for major media outlets, television, newspapers, and so forth, who really come out of the CDC. They've been trained by them, they've worked for them, they have a close relationship with them. And, of course, the pharmaceutical lobby is very strong, so they can lobby politicians to vote in certain ways on certain issues. They're also teamed up. So you have people that are committed to an agenda of lies, basically. Mm-hmm. All the way up and down the line. And what people have to understand is, for example, we have this current thing that is being called the Zika virus controversy, the epidemic, the public health emergency that's been declared by the World Health Organization, where the claim is that this virus causes a birth defect in babies, smaller heads, smaller brain size, brain damage, etc., etc. So virtually everybody swallows that story. Well, starting in the late 1980s, I began to realize that this was an area I needed to investigate. And the further I investigated it, the more fraud that I found. So in recent articles, for example, at No More Fake News, I've shown that there is no proof whatsoever. I mean, according to conventional standards or any standards, it's not even close. There is no proof that this virus has anything to do with brain damage, birth defects in young babies. It's not even close. So then you have to ask, well, why are they making this story into a big deal? Why? What are they trying to do here? And now we get into, you know, it's like you're looking at the CIA. What is the covert op here? What is the cover story? What are the false trails? that they're leaving behind for investigators? What are they trying to do? Who are they trying to protect? That becomes a key question.
Mm-hmm.
And so, for example, in Brazil, where they claim that this, quote, epidemic of microcephaly began, brain damage in babies, Brazil happens to be the biggest user of pesticides in the world, of any nation. And some of those pesticides are banned in 20 other countries because they're just too poisonous. So we have a country that's literally drenched in toxic pesticides. And pesticides have already previously been linked to all manner of birth defects and brain damage. Well, those are the people that have to be protected. The pesticide manufacturing companies, the big giant agri-corporations like Monsanto, where they use huge amounts of pesticide on these corporate farms in Brazil, where a great deal of land has been taken over by foreign interests and financiers. And so it becomes very convenient to say that all of this brain damage to babies is being caused by some virus that is the property of the medical cartel. Only we understand it. Only we can talk about it. Only we can heal it. Only we can prevent it with a vaccine. And the public just scratches their heads and moves on because they don't think they're smart enough to look into this. That's how a covert op is done by the medical cartel. So that gives you kind of another shot out of the box here about how all this operates.
Right. And also, they are you saying, too, that these agencies, they plan this way out? And money, obviously, is the motivator here. But since the people generally have the attention span of a flea, they can put out the headline, Zika virus causes encephalitis, and that, you know, like you said, people move on. But the underlying factors are hidden. Correct?
Mm-hmm.
The real
underlying factors are hidden on purpose because the real culprits who are killing people and maiming people and poisoning people, these are the giant corporations that are part of the globalist agenda to run the world, basically. That's what all these trade treaties are about that we keep hearing. To
exactly.
give predatory, gigantic transnational corporations the right to do the kind of business they want to do all over the world, relocate their factories, no environmental regulations, nobody cares, pay off bribes if necessary, put millions of people out of work in the United States, for example, because they close factories here and move them overseas, where they pay workers, you know, 3 cents a day, virtually slaves. And now, when they run into trouble, these giant predatory corporations, because, oh, well, you know, we're spraying pesticides all over the place in different countries, and we have somebody discovered that there are thousands of cases of brain damage in babies being born, we need a cover story. Well,
gotcha.
We know who can provide that for us, our friends at the CDC, because they are compulsive virus hunters, and you let them loose anywhere in the world, and they will say they found a virus that causes all this, and then we can wash our hands of the whole thing and say, well, it's out of our control, you know, it's unfortunate, but certainly we, the predatory corporations, have nothing to do with this. It's a medical problem, and we'll let the medical people solve it. And everybody wins except the people.
Right. So they're steering the population by propaganda, which most of the audience knows this, but this is for the newer people coming in. They steer the agenda, they steer the propaganda, they steer the thoughts implanted in the people to cover for what they're doing underneath everything, like the Zika virus or the Ebola virus or even the we could go all the way back to the H1N1. There's always some sort of panic somewhere in the world, and you're saying that they actually locate countries where they can pull this off so that it's believable?
Sure. It's even believable in the United States in most cases. Mm-hmm. They announce a virus, they say it's a big threat, and people stand up and salute. They say the virus came from, oh, it came from China, oh, it came from Africa, oh, it came from Brazil, oh, it came from wherever, and people buy that. Sure, okay, okay. And it's a very successful program. It also has other aspects, which is, if you keep the population frightened, as you just pointed out, mm-hmm. every couple of years with one of these so-called epidemics, you've also now got people who will be more prone to obey orders. Not just an order to, say, get a vaccine or to see a doctor, or in the case of the Zika virus, not to even get pregnant, which a lot of women are opting out of because they're afraid they might give birth to a baby with brain damage.
Or aborting them.
But also to obey orders in general given by the authorities, whatever authorities those are, political, medical, military, police, everybody.
Right. So they steer with fear.
You tune up the population.
They steer with fear. They get the population whatever they want based on fear. And that's where I think people are starting to wake up. I don't know if it's the internet, if it's the constant pounding away of your good work, people like Ty Bollinger, Mike Adams, everybody's out there just constantly not giving up and pushing the truth. I think the truth is finally coming through. I've been watching this Ty Bollinger, The Truth About Cancer series. I think we're on episode 6. And it is fascinating, and you've got some cameos in there too, but it's absolutely fascinating. And what encouraged me, John, is the boldness that people are defying the word police. I know that being on the radio and doing the health report, and I also have an essential oils business. I can't use certain words when I'm talking about certain things like heal or cure or anything like that. And something that came to me the other day was, we always look at this, we're told about the medical industry. Everything is the medical industry. And I say we start a new mantra of calling it the healing arts profession. Because the medical industry is an industry, and pounding that home. But what used to take place, the turn of the century and thousands of years beyond that, before that, was the healing arts, and it truly is an art. And that's what Ty is exposing in this, is healing really is an art. It's not an industry. And if people start thinking about that as two separate choices, then that begins to clear the field a little bit and get people stepping out of the matrix. Do you agree with that?
Yes, I do. But I will also make another distinction, too. And here's where a lot of people get very confused. The one area that modern medicine really excels at when it's done right is acute emergency crisis medicine.
Agreed.
If you're in the middle of a big pileup on the freeway and you're lying there with some broken bones and so forth, chances are your first choice is not going to be to pick up your cell phone if you can and call an herbal specialist. What you're hoping for is a good emergency team to take you to a hospital where they do it right and they put you back together again. Okay, mm-hmm. Great, terrific. If you've got a good team, that's good. Now, what the medical cartel does is they basically parlay that into saying, therefore, you see, across the entire spectrum of medical care, we do the same brilliant kind of job.
Mm-hmm.
Wrong, 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 wrong. You know, it's like saying, well, he's a great actor, therefore he can dance. Maybe he can't. He can sing. No, he can't. He has a terrible voice. But it's all show business, you see, so we assume he can do these things. Well, that's not true. The same with the practice of modern medicine. People have to begin to make that distinction. Okay, look, if I can get the right team and I have an emergency acute crisis, chances are I'm in the right hands and I'll get put back together again. But for other conditions, especially so-called chronic conditions, deteriorating long-term conditions, wait a minute, this is not the same ballpark at all. Mm-hmm. Now we're talking about endless amounts of diagnosis, endless amounts of toxic drugs that cause symptoms that are now diagnosed as other diseases requiring more toxic drugs, and gradually the person sinks down into the cemetery over the course of his life. That's a whole different proposition.
And that's part of the education is, and I've talked about that on my segment, is we have an amazing crisis care, trauma care industry. And if God forbid I break a leg or rupture my spleen, I want the pharmaceuticals to get me through the trauma, but the healing later comes from a whole different perspective of what we call the health industry. And so I am so on the same page with you, and that's a great distinction. Great distinction. What you're doing, what Ty's doing, what Mike's doing, what I'm trying to do is educate the people on that, because it's one big cloud in everyone's mind, and we have been programmed to think that way, that you go into the hospital and you continue on with their treatments. But that's not health care. That's trauma care. So, moving on from that, you had an article a few weeks ago about Vaxxed. Tell us about Vaxxed. Tell us what you know. Have you seen the film?
And I've seen pieces of it. I'm going to see the whole thing in the next 4 or 5 days.
What did you get from what you saw?
Well, I know a lot about the background of the film because I know the producer and the director, and they actually did some interviews with me that were sort of background before they put together the final version of the film. So I know what they were doing. I know them well. And I also have seen and heard some of the clips, the most important clips in the movie, from the CDC whistleblower, William Thompson. This is a breakthrough film that everybody should see if they get the chance, and I'm sure eventually everybody will get the chance when it goes to DVD. But to boil it down, it's a film about a longtime researcher at the Centers for Disease Control, William Thompson, who in the summer of 2014 confessed in writing on his lawyer's website that he had lied, cheated, and committed fraud along with colleagues at the CDC in a study that was looking to see whether there was a connection between the MMR vaccine and autism. MMR vaccine, measles, mumps, rubella. Mm-hmm. And Thompson confessed that they covered up the connection. It was there, and they covered it up by omitting vital data. This was back in 2004. 10 years went by before he confessed. And we have audio clips of him on the telephone with people who are involved with the production of the film, Vaxxed, confessing to this, as well as his written statement. So this film blows the lid off of tremendous fraud at the CDC in giving a free pass to a vaccine and claiming it had no connection to autism when in fact it does. So how many deaths and brain damage destructions have occurred in children since 2004 when the study was published and 2014 when Thompson confessed to fraud, and even now because the vaccine is still on the schedule for all children. That's what the film reveals.
Now, they're not going to be able to hold this down for long. They're not going to be able to suppress this for long. What do you think the ramifications are once this blows wide open?
Well, one of the ramifications is that there's other fraud beyond this study, that other studies have been cooked and slanted and faked in order to give a glowing picture of vaccines, when in fact vaccines are causing a tremendous amount of destruction. Mm-hmm. This is what, above all, the medical cartel is trying to protect: vaccines, vaccines, vaccines. They will do and say anything in order to protect them. And this film breaks the ice. It shows how they protect through fraud, through lying, without any conscience.
And how do they? What are their methods for keeping people like Robert De Niro in fear? That he actually I read your piece on Vaxxed, and you said Robert should have. He had so many opportunities to break this ice, and he should have done this, and he could have done that, and he could have done this. And I was fist pumping the air reading this article, because you were spot on with everything. What kind of pressure do you think he experienced with all this? Same pressure you probably experienced, but his was more concentrated.
Well, what happened is, for people who don't know the story, Robert De Niro, the actor, is one of the founders of the Tribeca Film Festival in New York City that happens every year. It's become bigger and bigger and bigger. And the film Vaxxed was scheduled to be shown at the festival this April. So De Niro announced, once media stories began appearing saying, why is this film going to be shown, you know, blah, 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 he said, I think it's an important film. It's personal to me and my family because we have an autistic child. And I'm going to introduce it live on stage. Boom.
Mm-hmm.
A day or two later, he turns around and cancels the film. Not going to show it. Been in discussions with people, the sponsors of the film festival, medical people, and decided it's not a good idea for various reasons to show the film, but I'm hoping that it will be seen elsewhere or something to that effect. So the film is canceled. Now there's a huge uproar in the press, because now the press has to defend the idea of censorship and no free speech. The film you can't see is Vaxxed. So now the effort to suppress it backfires, because now it becomes a gigantic story. And a theater in New York called the Angelica steps up to the plate and says, we'll show it. They're not part of the film festival. So it's booked there for a week, packed houses. They extended another week. It's now being shown in L.A. It was shown in a film festival in Florida to packed houses. Coming to San Diego, other places. And the story has exploded. So now more and more people are getting a chance to see the movie. Then, to put a cap on this, De Niro appears on a Fox interview in New York, I'm going to say 4 days ago.
I saw that.
And he says, basically, and it looks like he's come out of a trance, because I don't know if people have ever seen De Niro on interviews, but he's usually, you know, almost too reticent to say anything. All of a sudden, he's alert. He's mm-hmm. there. And on Fox 5, he's saying, this film ought to be seen. It's very important. We're not going to show it at the Tribeca Theater, but it's going to be seen elsewhere, and it's important. And then the questions come. Well, don't you think it's possible that parents who see the film might decide not to vaccinate their children, and that this could be dangerous, et cetera, et cetera, you know, the usual thing.
Mm-hmm.
And he shakes his head. He says, no, that's not the whole story. Not the whole story. There's more to learn about this. And then he starts taking a stand with the mothers who know that after their child was vaccinated, the child suffered tremendously and was never the same again. he's standing with the mothers all of a sudden. He's coming out of the closet. He's being very definite. And so he's shaken off whatever the pressure was that was put on him at first. And I traced some of the connections in New York City because I know something about how money works in New York City. And it turns out that his two co-founders of that film festival have major ties to a medical organization in New York called the NYU Child Study Center, where they have an autism research wing. And they do, you know, all manner of research on autism except for the vaccine connection.
That is
out, never to be done. They exerted pressure on the co-founders of the Tribeca Festival, who in turn exerted pressure on him. And for, you know, a few days, he caved in. But then he came back. So now, this film has received tremendous exposure because of the press stories about it. And it's going to wake up a whole lot of people. I know a couple of people who saw it yesterday who didn't know, let's say they weren't close to the vaccine issue for a long time. And they sat there, and when they came out of the theater, they were absolutely devastated. They could hardly talk about it. It was so overpowering what they saw, what was revealed about what vaccines are doing to children.
So two things. You're saying the pressure actually came from this organization, not so much from the CDC or Big Pharma.
Well, there were multiple vectors. Yes, the CDC was involved, and of course then that means Big Pharma was involved because the CDC represents Big Pharma.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, there was pressure through a group of doctors, medical bureaucrats, et cetera, that are more or less fronts for the CDC to exert tremendous pressure in the press to shut down the movie. But the people closest to De Niro, the co-founders of this film festival, I am sure they were conduits for whatever pressure was being directly applied to De Niro.
And so at this point now, so at this point everybody's sort of throwing their hands up and saying, we can't control this anymore. It has backfired. So
yeah.
That's actually a terrific thing, isn't it?
It is. You see, sometimes these people are very stupid. Because if they had just, you know, ignored the whole thing, the film would have been shown. There would have been, you know, criticism of it in the press, some kind of a, you know, minor uproar, and the whole thing would have gone away. But when they put enough pressure on to actually get De Niro to cancel the film, now it became an issue of censorship.
Right.
So everything they did backfired.
Right.
Same thing happened in Houston. In Houston, at a major film festival, the head of the film festival had accepted Vaxxed to show it, then turned around and canceled the film and told the distributor for Vaxxed that he had been under tremendous pressure and threats to shut down the film, and that those threats came from government officials. It turned out that the officials were in the mayor's office, Houston mayor's office, Sylvester Turner's office, and they had issued the threats by saying, look, we partially fund this film festival. We're going to take the money away.
Mm.
You're going to be crippled. So either you shut down this film or you're going to lose the money.
Now, who was pressuring the politicians? Tell the audience who's at the top of this pressure.
The city supports vaccine campaigns for children throughout the city of Houston. All right, so where does that support ultimately come from? The CDC.
Right.
The CDC and other associated health agencies and groups that spread the pro-vaccine message all over the United States every day. So through the City of Houston program to support vaccination for all kids all the time, no matter what, the pressure was exerted on the film festival. But the city receives support from federal agencies, federal health agencies. And therefore, they're not going to suddenly turn around and say, yeah, we support vaccines for everybody all the time, but we are funding a film festival that's going to show an anti-vaccine movie. Not going to happen. But I have to point out that this is a ripe situation for a lawsuit, because what you now have is clear evidence of a government entity shutting down the First Amendment by making threats to withdraw money, public money, taxpayer money, from an entity called a film festival.
Wow.
That's overt government censorship. And to me, you could have quite a strong case in court if you mounted a lawsuit against the city government of Houston.
You know, this little film called Vaxxed is really opening up lots of cans of worms, isn't it? It's just, it's cracking, the seams are showing, and I'm excited about it. I'm hopeful. This is terrific. And then with this documentary coming out on cancer and the vaxxed, and it seems like there's this vortex of truth that's starting to spin louder and faster, and people want more. And so I'm hoping the audience is connecting the dots, because we live in this matrix, we live in this hologram, and we just sort of go along as good little citizens. And then all of a sudden something happens to our families. It's an immediate thing, either to us individually or someone we love, and it becomes a problem. And this, so it's isolated. The frustration is isolated. This is becoming very, very big and very mainstream, and it's because of the work of you and all the other people that have just been pounding away at this for years and years, and I'm so grateful for you and so many of the people out there that never gave up and just keep pushing the truth out there. Now, that brings me to another question. How has John Rappaport stayed so relatively safe speaking truth to power?
Well, I don't have all the answers to that question, but what I can tell you is I've had a few policies, let's say, that I've adopted over the years that have stood me in good stead, especially since I went to the internet. Mm-hmm. And that is, if you've got something, publish it now. Don't tell stories about what you're going to do. Just do it now, right away. And that is a form of protection, because you're not tipping your hat. You're just doing it. You're doing what you do.
Right.
And also, I think, and this is just something personal with me, I write a lot of articles that are, how can I put it? Here are the facts, folks.
Mm-hmm.
This is where the facts come from. Here are the conclusions that are obvious from these facts. Well, that's a hard nut to crack when you present it that way. And when you present it often that way.
Right.
It has a certain sword-like quality, you might say.
Yeah.
Let me give
mm-hmm.
you an example. And this is one of the big stories that I've pounded on for years now.
Starfield?
Yep.
Uh-huh. Yep. Yes, please continue.
July 26, 2000. Journal of the American Medical Association. All right. Dr. Mm-hmm. Barbara Starfield, the author. Johns Hopkins School of Public Health. Revered public health expert. Everybody's credentials are mainstream and meticulous up and down the line. She publishes a review called, Is U.S. Health Really the Best in the World? And her conclusion is, get this, that every year the U.S. medical system kills 225,000 people. If you extrapolate that out to a decade, you get 2.25 million deaths as a direct result of the U.S. medical system. There it is.
Mm-hmm.
Now, other studies have come along that have bolstered her conclusions, and in an interview that she gave with me about a year or two before she died, she said, my estimate back in 2000 was conservative. Other studies have raised those numbers higher. So, any time that bloggers or medical people decide to, you know, ask me questions or make criticisms of this or that or the other thing, I don't even answer them. I just publish another article about this situation.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so what you've got here are people appearing on television and in the press that call themselves medical experts, and they talk down their nose at the public, and they tell them this vaccine is completely safe and this medical drug is wonderful and we have a new breakthrough in the care of this disease and that and whatever and whatever. And they're all standing on this time bomb, which is every year in the U.S., the medical system kills 225,000 people, 106,000 as a result of FDA-approved pharmaceutical drugs, and 119,000 as a result of mistreatment and errors in hospitals. They're standing on that time bomb. They know it exists. They're not ignorant. So, how believable are they? How much credibility do they possibly have when they begin giving the public assurances about the safety of these medical treatments? They have zero credibility when it all comes out. And so I put it all out there many, many, many times in many different ways just to say, here it is, folks. This is it. This is the fact. Now, here's what it means. What it means is that you're being lied to every single day about medical issues. Every single day, this way and that way, you're being lied to completely. Mm-hmm. And until the medical system and the government come out and admit how many people they're killing, and this is just in the U.S., but then there's no reason to trust anything they tell you. That's irrefutable. What are you going to say about it? I mean, there it is. In one of their most prestigious journals, from one of their most prestigious doctors.
But you didn't hear about... Yeah, you didn't hear about Barbara Starfield's research in the mainstream media or anywhere close to it. They just work so hard. You're right. They work very hard to keep this information down.
That's right. And...
So.
They're on the team. You know, like I said at the beginning, they're on the team with the CDC and with the FDA and with medical schools and pharmaceutical companies and, you know, the whole works. It's the same team. They're all playing together. So the last thing they would admit is something that I just ran down for the audience here. But people can become aware of this. They don't have to take their cues from major media. They can become completely aware of the truth and then begin to make their decisions based on that.
Well, and I think that's happening. That's what encourages me is the controversy with the vaxxed film and, you know, just leaving the vaccine world and going into the food world, which is a whole another show. People are demanding organic foods. I did a piece a couple weeks ago on my health segment about conventional farmers are complaining because no one wants their food anymore. And there are, you know, your regular conventional grocery stores now have organic foods, organic produce sections. People are catching on to this, and at some point they're not going to be able to keep this lie down. People are catching on. You know, and it's the language. That's what I wanted, in the last few minutes, I wanted to go over the language. They have stolen and twisted the language. For example, the word conventional. Conventional means ordinary, common. Shouldn't conventionally grown food be organic? But they've twisted it around. I have to hunt for organic food, and I have to pay a pretty penny for it. But conventional food, which is common, normal, usual food that's been around for a while, they can inject it, they can spray it, they can genetically modify it. That's called conventional. So I want to start a movement where we actually begin to take the language back. And that would be one example. So I'm encouraged. I mean, are you seeing your numbers go up? Are you getting more feedback? What's happening
way up.
From way up?
Way up.
Good.
Way up. Yep, in the last 3 years, if you looked at some sort of graph, I guess, because No More Fake News came online in 2001, so it's been 15 years now. If you looked at the last 3 years, you would see a line that goes whoop, way up all of a sudden. Yeah, because more people have become aware, more people want to know the truth, and a word about, how can I put this, about people who are researchers, investigators, freelance reporters, etc., etc. In other words, who want to get information out. What I've discovered, much to my surprise, and it wasn't just one shock, it was a series of shocks, you know, this has to do again with the internet, which was, the deeper I went on stories in investigating, beyond the point where most people would even believe there could be lies and so forth, the deeper I went, the better work I did, the bigger the audience became. It was a correlation that could not be denied. And that, to me, is extremely heartening, because it means that you, as an independent person, will find reward for your work and effort. The better it is, the deeper it goes, because now we're connected all over the world. And it's just been amazing. It's just been amazing because, you know, in our society, people generally begin to believe, okay, I'm going to have to fill my life with all manner of compromises at every level, just the way things work and this and that and so on and so forth, and that's the only way to survive and get along. And people limit themselves further and further down to smaller and smaller size in that way, thinking that it's the only way to operate. Well, it turns out that's not true at all. The more you reverse that trend and you become more intelligent, more independent, take more of a stand for what you see as being the truth, in the long term, the better off you are in every single way.
Mm-hmm. And I agree with that. I think people are hungry. I don't know exactly what triggered it, but there is a tsunami of hungry people who are tired of the alphabet media, because they know now. They keep hearing the same mantras over again. They're watching their society collapse. They're watching their children, perfectly healthy babies, be affected by vaccines. They're seeing, they're watching movies like the Ty Bollinger series. They want to see vax. I think I saw Robert De Niro on Good Morning America, and it was an interview a couple weeks ago, and he had a spine. He actually confronted, like you said on the Fox interview, he confronted them, and he said, no, all I'm saying is, I'm not anti-vaccine. Stop with the anti-vaccine stuff, okay, because the media want to put you in one camp or the other. And he said, no, I'm not anti-vaccine. I'm pro-safe vaccine. Let's look into this. And I think that the powers that be have really underestimated the population, because when you get them riled, when you pull the rug out from under them, they will respond in kind, and you are one example of that.
Yeah, that's really true, Katie. Let me interject this very quickly here, and I think this will interest the two of you to hear this, and then I want to leave enough time for John to promote his website and his work. I have 11 email messages here from people that are saying they're cutting out certain words that you're saying. They're cutting out syllables at the end of certain keywords, and they're fooling with Katie's volume. And one or two, you'd say it's computer operator error, but some of these are consistent listeners. So obviously we're striking a chord. We will have this up on the net tomorrow and also on YouTube. John, I want to leave you time to talk about your website and about your good work, where people can follow you and how they can support you.
I appreciate that, Dave. Are you saying that in this very interview now that the ends of words are being cut off?
Yes, in some words, not all words. Keywords. Keywords
well,
connected
to medical
health terms.
I'll tell you what, if you
terms.
Find out what those words are, would you send me an email? Because I'd like to reflect on that.
To the people who have emailed me, please send me specific examples. And I haven't, I'm just reading off the title lines right now. I haven't had time to go in and read the emails themselves. But if I can get that information, I'd appreciate it. So, John, tell us how we can follow your work and support you.
Okay. The website is nomorefakenews.com. Everything is there. You can sign up for free email list. You can read all my articles. Very easy there, right on the homepage. Click on the headlines. I write every day. New articles posted all the time, so you can access everything that I do, all my work, right there at nomorefakenews.com. It's been there for 15 years, and it keeps on rolling.
Very good. Katie, any last words for John?
Boy, John, thank you for coming on. I'd love to have you on again, because there's a world of topics that we could cover, and I'm sure in the next few months another crisis will appear. But but thank you so much for coming on and letting us pick your brain. It's a wonderful brain, so thank you.
Thank both of you. I really appreciate the time, and it's been a great conversation.
Yep,
it sure has. Yeah, great job, Katie. Thanks, John. Well, in the next hour, we're going to be joined by Doug Hagman, and we're going to reflect on the potential for economic collapse. I think it's almost a foregone conclusion, but we're also going to look at some of the spinoff effects. And Doug also has a book that he's just written, and I'm proud to be an advertiser of that book as of this week. So action-packed lineup tonight, and we're really glad to bring it to you. Just very quickly, I want to remind everybody about Scene.life, the Facebook alternative. Don't support Zuckerberg, Rockefeller, and the NSA. Get over to Scene.life, particularly if you're new to the movement. It's where you can get your feet wet, meet lots of interesting people, read relevant articles, and so forth. And I am proud, as I was just named, to be their national spokesperson. So let's get the heck away from Facebook and over to Scene.life. We'll see you in hour number two. Oh, I just got a note. Boy, this is just par for the course here. Katie, we got 20 seconds to fill.
I know, and you and I can always do that. But, boy, that I just, real quick, I'd love to have John on again. This is.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
This is absolutely my, I had a whole list of things I wanted to talk about, but definitely the VAX thing. So that was great. Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah, that's true. We have a surprise announcement, too, about something that's coming our way with regard to movies. Anyway, stay tuned. See you in hour number two.